Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. All right, welcome back, everybody. Episode 196. Ooh, 196. It is the week of Thanksgiving here in the United States. Tony, happy early Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And I was just thinking, I don't know if I can do a podcast next week. We'll see.
Oh, okay.
Because we're going out of town. I think I'm back Saturday, so it's probably fine. But just putting that out there on the radar.
All right.
I could probably do it, but it might be delayed.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
And
we'll make it.
I'll have no real topics. I'll have to make all the topics up. Because I'm not going to have a lot of internet access where I'm going, so I'll just make stuff up, Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's what I'll do. Yeah.
And we've been doing pretty good podcasting every week too. We've been doing really pretty good. My gosh, let's see here. 189. Yeah, since 189. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This will be our eighth week, two straight months, Tony. We're doing pretty good.
We could do a podcast in the car while I'm driving, and it could be a drinking game where you have to take a drink every time you hear my toddler scream.
That's a tricky one. Some toddlers travel better than other toddlers.
I know, but it's like maybe he won't scream, maybe he will. Who knows? Just have to listen attentively.
Screaming toddlers, ladies and gentlemen. Potentially next podcast, so you don't want to miss that.
That could be like a good game. Maybe we should make the IT Babble Screaming Toddlers podcast game. Something there must be something there we could develop to a revenue stream, Patrick.
Well, I'll think about it. In the meantime, Tony, Thanksgiving is also known in the United States for Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which are big deals, some of the biggest shopping in the season, and in fact, the year for us Americans. Do you have anything on your radar that you are looking to purchase?
No, I really just want to get at least 6 hours of sleep. Average 6 hours of sleep a night on this trip, which probably won't happen. Ooh. And, no, I don't really like, I just don't really like shopping I don't know. We just don't buy a lot of stuff.
No.
So,
no.
I kind of got desensitized, I think, to the whole concept living overseas for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, especially in a place like Dubai, which is very consumer centric. You just kind of get jaded with that whole thing.
Yeah. So, I am looking forward to watching some recaps of Black Friday on YouTube.
I don't know. Ever since most people are buying their stuff online, I don't know if we're going to see like the crazy fights and people punching each other and pulling hair and stuff. I don't know if that's going
to. I guess the question is
going to happen.
I guess the main thing is there going to be a game system this year that comes out that you can only get in the store?
So here's the thing: the PlayStation 5 and Xbox X. The Xbox, what a stupid name. They're still very high demand, and they're very difficult. Whenever they do show up, they sell out almost immediately, so they're very difficult to get your hands on one. For the PlayStation, what's that?
Is it X because it's the 10th version?
I have no idea. No, it's not the 10th version. I don't know why it's X. Because they don't know how to name their products, Tony. That's why Microsoft called it
the X. Isn't that going to be an X? And then BOX, and then another X.
A lot of people call it the triple X console.
Oh,
because
there we go.
There's three X's,
Yeah.
And they referred to last one, which was the Xbox One. They just referred to it as the X-Bone.
I heard that the console actually is molded from Vin Diesel's bicep. Is that true?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But they're very good. I hear both of them are. I have a PlayStation 5. I got lucky and I got one. But they're very good.
I know someone who he put his name in to wait for this was a few years ago. He put his name in to wait for some kind of game system. So he pre-ordered it, and he was in the store, and he was in the garden center, and he looked up, and one of the game systems that whatever he was waiting for, somebody had tried to hide it in the garden center.
Oh.
So he just assumed it was like an employee who was like trying to hide it until employees were allowed to buy it. So he picked it up and he canceled his pre-order and went and bought it.
Well, good for him. You know, he got very lucky. Those are
so I don't know if that's a common tactic for people out there, you know, in the store. Maybe, you know, I have something I call Tony's theory of parking garages.
Oh,
now,
all right.
I invented this in Dubai because parking garages there are horrendous. And
they're terrible.
We used to use a parking garage on a regular basis that actually was also the entrance ramp to a highway. So the parking garage was an entrance ramp to a highway.
And may I also add, the parking garage was for one of the most famous malls in the world, the Mall of
Emirates. So people had to go through that parking garage to get to the highway, even if they weren't going to shop.
That's right. That's right.
So just imagine the traffic in the mall times like 100. All the people who aren't going to shop are just trying to get on the road.
Just the worst.
So I started to theorize that possibly not breaking the law, so like not going down the wrong way, but never turning if someone is in front of you to look for a parking space would be smarter, because if there is a space, the person in front of you is going to get it first, right?
Yes, yes.
So I just started doing this years ago, and it works pretty well. So basically, what I do is I'm in a parking garage, there's a car in front of me, and I can either turn left or go straight. That decision is based on what that car does. If it turns left, I go straight. If it goes straight, I turn left. And I just keep doing that. And I always end up in a row where there's no other cars looking for that one spot.
Wow. Okay.
So I've been tracking this like anecdotally, but I think it works. So that being said, you go in to the Black Friday. It's crazy. You're looking for something that's supposed to be in electronics. Where is the employee that also wants that going to hide it? Are they going to hide it in electronics? No. They're going to put it somewhere that you would never think, like baby area. Like behind, the baby aisle.
That's a perfect place to put it because those shelves are really tall and you can hide it behind like all the Pampers and the diapers. Very, very tricky.
A garden center also good because it's like up high, big shelves. Mm-hmm. So just think that way. So when you're in there, be like, okay, there's no way I'm going to actually get one. So I've got to find the one that someone hid that they weren't supposed to hide, and I'll get that one. Okay, so there we go. That's some life advice. And you know, even try out the parking concept. I'm telling you, it works.
I will give it a try. But you don't
go down the wrong way. Okay, you can't cheat.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, if you can only go one way, it doesn't work. But usually, you've got a couple of routes you can take. All right. So that's what I do.
We don't have a lot of big parking garages like we used to in Dubai here in Indianapolis, but there are places downtown where they are very large. I will definitely give it a try. I'll give it a try.
Good luck.
All right. Okay, let's see if I can ready to play the
What am I drinking?
Are you ready, Tony? I don't know if you have anything tonight. Do you have anything?
I am not drinking beer tonight. No, because we have an early day tomorrow, so I'm just drinking a lot of water to stay hydrated.
Water is very good. I myself am just going to work tomorrow, so I'm going to have a single beer tonight, and I have the Great Lakes Elliott Ness. The Elliott Ness from Great Lakes Brewery.
Where do you find these?
So Great Lakes is up in Cleveland, which is not too far from us. So it's all over Indianapolis. You can find this beer all over Indianapolis, anywhere, of course, in Ohio. And Tony, a lot of people don't know that Elliott Ness worked in Cleveland.
Yeah. I used to know a guy from Cleveland. He called it the mistake on the lake.
It's not a, yeah, but this beer from Cleveland is actually is really, really good. And this
6.1%.
It's an amber lager, and it's delicious. It's one of my favorite beers of all time. You can't go wrong with it.
No, I like the sticker I'm looking at.
Yeah, they have very good beer artwork. Yeah, Elliott Ness. He worked in Cleveland, so they named a beer after him. you know.
Good job.
And do you think our listeners out there know who Elliot Ness is, Tony?
He was like, you know, he's Kevin Costner in the movie, right?
He is Kevin Costner, yeah.
The Untouchables.
Yep, that's it.
It's a good flick.
It is. It's very good, very entertaining. And
Kevin Costner, Sean Connery.
Yep, Robert De Niro playing Al Capone.
Yeah,
and Elliot Ness brought Al Capone to justice for tax evasion.
For tax evasion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there was basically the movie's about years of unnecessary violence. They just really needed to read some spreadsheets or ledgers. They had ledgers back then.
Yeah. If they had Excel, they would have caught him way, way earlier.
Like in a week. It's crazy, right? If they would have had Excel, Al Capone would have gone down in a week. And that is the truth.
All right. Okay. So, Tony, we are going to be talking about... you talk to people about the Surface SE.
I'll tell you all about it.
Okay.
When you're ready.
You have a topic about STEM.
Yeah.
But Tony, this is something I wrote a few weeks ago about life with a desktop. So my department was up for new computers, like in a computer cycle. We have a 4-year computer cycle. And we were up for computers, and we decided not to get a laptop, but to get a desktop instead of a laptop.
Whoa.
And then if we needed a laptop, we would simply use our own personal laptops. So if we have to sit in on meetings or, I don't know, we go to a conference or...
Right.
Because we found that most people come to our office for help. And we wanted the extra real estate. We didn't want to have to like plug into a monitor and have a place for a laptop. We figured so we got iMacs. So just having an iMac with a keyboard and mouse. And it works really well. It works really, really well. I was finding last year when I had my laptop that I wouldn't even take it home. I would just come home and work on my personal laptop at home because...
I think that's really getting more and more common. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
It used to be the opposite, but I'm starting to see that too. And just to be honest, like when I was trying to figure out the best way to like renovate these classrooms I've been working on, my core research showed that if each screen or each classroom, not each screen, but if each classroom had a Mac Mini in the classroom, that actually eliminated 80% of the problems just off the bat. And, you know, I brought this up and I'm like, and I started asking people about it. I'm like, if you went into a classroom and you had to start working, but you know, the system that you're using to run your class wasn't your laptop, would that be weird to you? I mean, all you really need to do is put your stuff in the cloud and then everything else, this, you know, the Mac Mini is going to power that room and do all kinds of stuff. Like you can power both screens at the same time. It can manage Bluetooth audio. It can be a video conferencing system all together.
And Tony, with the latest macOS Monterey, you can actually, if you have an iPad or an iPhone, you can actually, or another Mac computer, you can actually stream. You can use AirPlay to stream to it, like an Apple TV.
Mm.
Or a BenQ or something.
I've noticed that. Like,
it's
I've noticed that it seems to have that feature. But I think there's just some hesitancy. So when people hear that, they feel like if the school provides, and I, you know, I've brought this up before, like a long time ago, because as you know, I'm a proponent of attempting to do a BYOD program for teachers instead of just giving them equipment, like give them money, let them buy it. So when I was looking into that, the schools that were doing BYOD for teachers, they just put a computer in the room and the teacher could choose to bring their laptop or not. Like you said, if they were having meetings and stuff, they would bring their laptop. If not, they might just use their phone or an iPad or something like that they own. But I think the fear with those programs is that teachers feel like, wait a second, getting a laptop is like a benefit of the job.
Yeah.
And then the school will see it as, well, we're giving them a laptop. Why would we give them another computer? But definitely, especially with Apple, like if you have an iMac in a room running everything, or a Mac Mini in the room, it is significantly better than using a laptop. I mean, just hands down, it's a different experience.
Yeah. Yes, it is. We have we have a conference room, and we added one to the conference room, and it's so much simpler now. It's so much simpler. People just log into it. It has a common login. It's very simple, and then they just log into Google. And then every couple of days, I always go in there and make sure nobody's logged in, hasn't logged out of Google or something, so they can use Zoom. So they can put on, and we have a wireless keyboard and mouse, just a cheap Logitech and a cheap Logitech mouse, so they can sit anywhere in the room and control the screen, and they don't have to give up their own laptop or their, you know, it's just much simpler than coming in there. Am I plugging in with the right dongle? Am I on the right input? It's you just turn on the display, wiggle the mouse to wake up the computer, and you're off. It's great. So good. Super reliable.
That's right. But instead, we're going to go with unreliable laptops that people take everywhere. They take them everywhere. They connect them to everything. They bring them in, and who knows what's wrong with them.
That's right. That's right. And what I like about the iMac is the resolution is very high on an iMac. You can fit two web pages full size, 100%. Side by side with each other, and that would go. That'd be true for an Excel sheets or if you have documents,
I'm kind of running into a problem right now where I really want to try to explain to people that we no longer need two separate screens on the desk. You can just get an ultra wide screen. And if your laptop or desktop or whatever is high resolution, you get the same experience. You just don't have to have two screens.
That's correct. Yeah. And those ultra wides have been coming down in price over the past few years. You know, before they were like $1,000, but now you can find them for $400, sometimes even less, for very nice, like Samsung or,
And I'm not really, I mean, I understand it. Like, you have that kind of division, like, oh, my email's on the left and my document I'm working on is on the right. I get it. But if you're on one big screen, your email could still be on the left, and that document that you're working on the right is actually the same size as it is on that other screen. I mean, you're going to work at the same rate.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, these ultra wides, you might even be able to get three windows side by side next to each other if you wanted to. I guess depending on how wide they have to be. But no, they're I think you're perfect.
I just don't know. It's just a hard thing to explain to people, because cognitively, until you experience it, you don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. Like you've got to test it out. So
it's like the people who don't understand like having a second display with your laptop, and then you let them use it for a while, and somebody's like they're like, wow, I had no idea. How nice that is. I'm so much more productive. I get so much more done. So ultra wides. I like them. Me likey. All right. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting. You know, I don't think we'll ever have the school buy us a laptop again. I think we'll at least for
you are addicted to buying laptops, though, Patrick. You're
I know.
Our friend Omar, not as bad.
No, I'm nowhere near that bad. I had my Surface Book for almost 6 years. So that's,
do you remember,
that's a long time.
Like, how many, at one point, I think it was like 2012 or 13.
With Omar.
I went over to Omar's and he had a stack of laptops.
Yeah, he had like 6 to 9 of them, I think.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, what are you doing?
I remember his wife like just throwing down an ultimatum. She's like, You have like 2 months to get rid of them, or I'm just going to recycle them. And I don't know what he did with them. I can't. He was going to like build I think his plan was he was going to use them and like chain them all together, and so they'd be like a supercomputer. I think that was kind of his thinking.
I don't know. I don't know what he was going to do. But
he was going to take over the world. He's Omar.
Anyway.
All right. Anyway, so there it is. All right, so Tony, I was excited last week about the Windows Surface SE, the Microsoft's Chromebook competitor. And I had questions about it. I still have questions about it. But you went and you talked to some people.
Well, this is actually what I did. First, I contacted our Microsoft vendor, and they said that we can get one in like January. So I think I'm going to order one.
Okay.
But then I posted up the IT Babble write-up in a closed technology director group I belong to. And people were just like, okay, so I'll give you some examples.
Please, please.
First, this guy was like, too little, too late. And he just ripped into it. He's like, this thing, he's like, it is underpowered. It has a Celeron. What's all that about? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, they really needed, if they were going to do this, they needed to come out with a computer that made like sense and that had a lot of power and was still cheaper than a Chromebook. Microsoft dropped the ball years ago, and it doesn't even have a touchscreen.
Okay? Yeah, this is correct.
Another guy said, this thing is dead because it doesn't have a stylus and you can't write. And he said that at his school, they use Surfaces, and their school's all about the inking. They just do all their handwriting on the tablets.
Oh.
And he's like, if you're going to use Surface and you're not going to use handwriting, there's no point. That was his point with me. Although, I don't know. I still want children to write on paper. I'm not, I have a stylus on my phone. I like to take notes with it, but I just think it's better still for kids to write on paper. Maybe I'm too old.
No. But, no, I think there's something for that tactile. And plus, just kind of disconnecting. You know, just like you don't have to use the computer for everything. You can just shut it down. And sometimes when you're just right, I've tried taking notes on my Surface Book, and it was really good. But there would be times where I would screw up, and I would need to kind of flip it around. And if I have just paper and pencil or pen and pencil, I'm way more attentive. With my computer, notifications were coming in. There were things that were distracting
agreed.
Me. Sometimes the stylus would, even though it was really great on the Surface, sometimes it would just get weird. And I'd have to just kind of wait for like a second for it to kind of reset and then just start it up again.
There's another thing I don't think anybody really discusses. There's like centuries of research on writing instruments. So as human beings, we need a certain size of writing instrument at certain times in our lives to match our strength and dexterity. And there is a reason that number two pencils are that size and that weight. They could be longer, they could be fatter, they could be anything. There's a reason that Ball, the pen company, makes pens a certain size. There's a reason that Montblanc makes their really expensive pens a certain size and certain weight. And I just have never seen a stylus that kind of feels like a good writing tool.
Yeah.
Not, you know, if I could take like a, you know, a Sharpie or a number two pencil, something like that, and start writing and it would understand it, I think that would be great. But usually I just end up writing with my finger, like on the iPad. Mm.
Yeah,
I've tried a couple of those iPad styluses, the pens. I don't like them. I just write with my finger. And same like on a Smart Board or a Promethean board. I always try to end up like Smart. I think Smart doesn't let you. Smart's got like finger inking, but it doesn't really work. So I never really like their pens. But like the ViewSonic screens let you actually write with your fingers.
Yeah.
And they come with a nice pen, but I always default to my finger.
The
for
BenQ also has a very nice pen. Like it feels, but I do like writing with my finger on the BenQ, but not on the Surface. I just found my finger wasn't, I don't know how else to say it, but precise enough.
Mm. No, that's right. I think it's designed to use that pen, and I'm not saying the pen is horrible. It's just not, I don't know. It's just not the same.
No.
So although, but this guy was like, hard stop. If it can't do the writing, hard stop. And I was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. And then someone else was like, it won't run one. They were like, it won't run one note. So no, thank you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it will. I don't, maybe he thought it was underpowered. Like, I don't know.
Maybe.
OneNote's a beast. Like
it, and it is great.
It's yeah, but it's you know, it's its own like environment. So I don't really know. And then what was the other one? So oh yeah, someone was taking a shot at it because you know it doesn't run Chrome, even though it technically edge. It does.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like, you know, what you want to buy a machine that's locked out from apps and can't do what you need it to do? And then someone was like, this looks like a one laptop per child computer.
Oh man, I haven't thought about that disaster in a long time. Like,
they said OLPC, but I knew what it was.
I'm yeah.
Like, this is like an OLPC computer. No, thank you. I'm like, okay. So I don't even know if they read the article. They just looked at the photo and they're like, nope, walked away.
Well, I think this first version will have lots of problems. If you look back at the first version of the Surface, the Microsoft Surface, it was not a good device at all. I think Microsoft's moving in the right direction with this for schools, and they'll eventually get it right.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I mean, I want to try it out and see. There's some things about it I like. The price point. I know what size Chromebook most of the kids are buying.
Yep.
So it's the same spec, really, that they're buying.
Yeah.
So I'm not really worried about that. So yeah, I want to try it. Although I did fire up Intune I started trying to study it, and it's horrible so far. Like, I understand it. I think I can enroll a device into it. But I tried to just mess around with one device and enroll it, and it was not easy. And the setup, again, this is my first time out of the gate really with it. The setup was not straightforward. Like, I was in the admin center, and I activated the trial. So then I'm like, okay. So I go in my admin center and I can't find it. I'm like, okay, where's Intune at? And it's actually inside something called the Microsoft Endpoint Management Center, and it's connected through Azure. So it's like two separate hops out of the admin console to get to it. They need to have like a button that just says Endpoint or Intune in that Office 365 administrative console. Like, who's going to want to log into their Office 365 as an admin, go to the admin center, jump in the Azure, and it's like, well, you could bookmark it. Like, no, I just don't want to bookmark it. There's a button that says show all admin centers, and you hit that, it doesn't show up either. So these are things I really want Microsoft to deal with, because if the device works well, I need to make it easy for my team to manage these devices.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, they have to be able to do that, because there's no, you have to put it into, because if not, how are you going to push apps out onto it, or at least extensions or bookmarks or anything like that? Because it has to be configured. I don't even think you can deploy it without configuring it first. I think if you try to give it to somebody, it won't even work.
Yeah,
that's just my thinking.
So it needs to be easier from the administrative standpoint. So hopefully, I mean, I'll probably learn more as I go, but I'm just, you know, I just really wanted that button to be in there, Patrick. I wanted there to be a link in the freaking menu it's like, okay, Microsoft, I'm going to take the leap. I'm going to take it. This device needs to be managed with Intune, which apparently is not even a name that I can search inside your own administrative console. So,
they do some things so well at Microsoft, so well, and then they have other things that you're just like, what were they thinking? What was going through their head? Like, who approved this? Like, what number of people approved this? And it was like, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to allow schools to deploy our Surface SE in their community. I don't get it.
If you've got some Ask IT Babbles,
I just added one on there. I just saw it. I didn't even know it came through, but and it's not even a question. But I thought I'd share it.
Yeah. Yeah, my next topic is about STEM, but we could push it. I was just,
Oh, okay.
yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about how to build up the kind of the, what is it? The mul is it? It's not multi. Is it multi? Multi-curricular topics.
Oh,
So like,
okay.
STEM is like supposed to be an environment that you work in where you get to use science, technology, engineering, math, art all together. So it's multidisciplinary. And really, these are just projects that kids work on, and it doesn't even really need to be a class, but it needs to have a budget and it needs to have some oversight. So I was thinking about how difficult it must be for schools to set up a good STEM program that's based off something like the MIT Fab Lab,
Yeah.
where you're not giving grades. It needs to be accessible, mostly from like grade, 6 to 9. After that, kids get really busy with high school stuff. They can't really get into it. But by then, they would have a lot of skills. So they would learn the skills slowly. It needs to be able to be scheduled, like on their schedule, so they can go in and use the facilities and stuff. But it doesn't really fit into a department. It doesn't fit into any kind of department grading plan, scheduling plan, or anything else. So I've just been thinking about like a better way to show schools how they can plan one of these environments that work within their current scheduling and structure, but don't overburden the math department or overburden the science department, because neither one of those departments wants to take this on and manage it because it's only a quarter of what they do. Does that make sense?
It does.
So you're asking them to provide oversight for something that they only really touch 25% of. And at the boarding school where I worked, this was easy because it was a boarding school. So we could have STEM open in the evening and kids would just come. They would just sign up and come, and we'd set up a budget through like different fees that they paid, like, 'cause they have activity fees and stuff. And we literally could fund a very well ran STEM program that way. And the kids could do all kinds of projects. And that's those projects are all, feeding into their coursework. Like it's not like a myth. It really does happen. They use the STEM time to learn how to do cool stuff, and then as soon as they get an opportunity, they're like, "Hey, can I do this for my project?" And then, but they know that they have a time and a place to go work on it, and that's why that works. So I don't know. I've just been trying to work on some way to like make this flexible, so any school could really look at it and say, okay, if we want to do this, there's a few trade-offs, but we can implement it. It's going to cost this much,
That's
and
and a lot of schools will build a space for STEM,
right, a separate space,
but they
completely
don't
separate.
have a separate person to manage it.
That's right.
And so they leave it up to the teachers to kind of create find ways to use it. And what they end up ultimately doing, what teachers ultimately do with that space is they just use it as an extra workspace. Because they don't know how to use it, or they don't know, or they don't feel comfortable. Like, can my kids use a hammer and a nail, or a stall, or a
Right.
screwdriver, or can I just? And it doesn't have anyway. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I think this is a great topic. I think this is a really good topic.
So it's just been something I've been thinking about. So if anybody out there has like good ideas, and specifically don't think about the STEM work, think about the scheduling and all the logistics to create the opportunity for kids to drop in for a meaningful amount of time. And I also noted in this comment that I wrote in our notes, the boarding school next to where I was working in Korea, they required STEM twice, so 2 semesters of STEM for all their students in middle school, so from grade 6 to 8. And those kids, I have to say, like whenever we did high school level stuff like competitions and kind of maker fairs and stuff like that, they were pretty good. I mean, they had 2 full semesters of STEM, and the teacher would just rotate it. I mean, he might one grade 6 class, he might do 3D printing with, and one other topic, another one he might not do that at all and just do computer science and robotics, because he knows those kids are going to come back around in like grade 7 or 8, and then he's going to hit them with the next set of lessons. So he just wasn't really worried about who did what first. The goal was for them to do all of it by the time they got out of middle school.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it was a requirement. Like, they couldn't get into high school until they completed it.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's great. And then, because a lot of people, and STEM doesn't always have to be power tools or hammer and nail. It can also be a needle and a thread, a sewing machine.
Yeah, that's right. Folding paper.
Yep.
It's using cardboard, building things. It can be just a lot of different things.
Yep. So you don't have to have laser cutters and things like that, though those things are pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've never used
them. All right, Patrick.
All right.
Do we have a sound bite for this?
We do.
Ask. Yeah. IT Babble.
Ask IT Babble. So it's not really, it's more of a question for me. So Tony, I don't know if you remember, but I made a guide of Olympic scoring with Google Forms and Sheets. So my school has field day kind of at the end of the year, and everybody's broken up into teams, and they want to keep track of who scores what so we can have a crown a winner at the end. And people were just doing it like with a paper and pencil. So there was like literally four adults sitting at a table, sitting there calculating and adding things up, which was really slow, which was very, very, very slow. So I came up with a way to do it electronically through Google Forms and then having Google Sheets calculate and then tell you what the winner is. So all people have to do is, whoever's working a station, is to literally just use their phone, open up the form, and then just type in the correct number. So, and I wrote a 6-part series on this, and somebody filled out the question, and they said the Olympic scoring form article is amazing. Seriously, really well done. I've stumbled upon this because my wife and I host Gingerbread House Contest, and I think this may be the way for our judges to do the judging from their phones and not have to add and tally by hand. And I cut it off right there because he has some questions, and he put a this person put in their phone number. I'm certainly not going to put their phone number or their name up there. So I'll reach out to them next week.
We're not going to. And make sure you include a link to the podcast so they can subscribe, Patrick, if they haven't. Because it sounds like they just found us and then found a way to ask you the question.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's right.
So, yeah, you're going to make somebody's holidays even better, Patrick, with your Google Forms article.
I'm hoping. This comes up. I've had this before. I've had questions about this before, people reaching out to me. It's kind of neat. It's not a perfect solution. There are some problems with it, but it's good.
You need to like take this solution and just put some marketing around it and sell it as an app, even though it's not an app. It's just like you literally just Google Drive in like a form. And you need to go to whoever runs that Iowa caucus, because I don't know if you remember, they had all those iPads. Reading this, and they paid. It was a massive amount of money for this app so that everybody could use these iPads to like tally votes and stuff.
And it was
it was a disaster.
The servers kept crashing. Things were unresponsive. Instead of having results like instantaneously, like they promised, it took days to get the final results.
Days. So you need to go. I mean, you're not that far from Iowa. I think this could be a game changer.
All right.
And just be like, listen, it helped our scoring. It helped these gingerbread people. And now it's going to help you.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. But anyway, if you're interested out there, we do have a special page. It's at just below our banner. It says Technology in the Classroom. And to the right of that, there's a link for Ask IT Babble. Then next to that is Olympic scoring with Google Forms and Sheets. And there you can get all 6 parts, and you can get an example of a Google form, what it looks like, and the Google Sheet that it feeds to. So you can actually kind of just follow along and do this. I thought about making this a video, but it would be too long of a video. It would just be, it'd be super, it would be like 45 minutes, I think. I don't think there's any way I can do it short.
No, so. You could run like a, you should also offer like a 1 week workshop that's like $800 a day per person.
Oh yeah.
And advertise it to people doing like voting and yeah. just, this would be amazing. They'd be like, oh man, I didn't even, this is going to change everything. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, you know, this could be a good workshop for a conference right here. This could be a good...
I think it would be actually be a good workshop because yep. it takes you not just through using the tools, but through some math and stuff like that. And it really kind of demonstrates how you can use these tools like synchronously across distances and kind of work collaboratively.
So, yeah, yeah.
Do it, Patrick.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to reach out to this person. So, but I just want to give them, you know, a thank you. I hope they're listening to the podcast. If not, when I call them, I'll certainly get them to subscribe. Try to get them to subscribe. But I just want to say thanks for the question. We do appreciate it. And yeah, you made it on the podcast.
See if you can get like a free gingerbread house.
Maybe. Our kids like to make them. Ask them
if it can be like, kind of like gooey thing. With chocolate chips. I don't know if that's possible, but...
Gingerbread is really good. If you, Omar's wife makes some really good gingerbread. I mean, really. I think you've had it, Tony. It's really top-notch stuff. It's really good. Really, really good.
Well, there's a, yeah, shout out there to Omar's wife. And yep. then if she would like to use Ask IT Babble, she could tell us how many laptops Omar has had at any one time. So that would be good.
Yeah.
I think it was like 7 or 8, but I bet at one time, I bet it's been like 15. Well, who knows?
You know what's coming up. It's we're on episode, this is episode 196. So I think when episode 200 rolls around, I think we should try to get Omar.
I think he'll do it.
I think he will. It. We'll have a trifecta. So, all right, cool. But anyway, that's it. That's all I've got. Tony, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good, and I'll head out for my road trip tomorrow.
All right, well, safe travels, and for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
You can find us at www.itbabble.com. So keep on babbling, and we'll see you in the next episode.